You guys, it's Andy Scrolls. It is a fashionably late episode, 6:40, whatever. And let me just tell you a quick summary of my weekend. I'm actually not really going to share a lot of information, which is not maybe the most fun thing to hear. But anyway, I was very excited to record an episode of AG Friday night, which would have been out in a timely manner Saturday early morning, about Potomac, because I watched part one of the Potomac reunion, which I just now rewatched for the second, but it feels like 30th time because it's just really stayed with me like a warm hug. I watched the Potomac reunion and I was just like, this is great. This is really great. And to anyone who didn't enjoy necessarily this season of Potomac or did, the reunion, part one, A plus. So anyway, I was very excited to record an episode. And unfortunately, while on a phone call with someone in Rhode Island, they had a medical episode while on the call. So my weekend has been different than what I anticipated. But in a little bit of a haze while I was like throwing stuff into a bag and booking a train, thankfully, I was able to get the last train out of New York, which left like, I don't even remember. Shortly-ish after this call. Yeah, shortly after the call, I hustled to Penn Station, was able to get to Rhode Island, and they are okay. So, but suffice it to say, I really was kind of upset at myself because I was like, God damn it. You want to record the episode. You need to record the episode. So thankfully, even though everything was a little bit of a blur, I did remember to put my recording equipment in the bag. Although I didn't know while I was on the train, but I was too rattled and kind of stressed to even double check because I was like, it's in God's hands now, also known as Andrew Cohen. Like if I forgot the mic but brought the recorder, I don't know, maybe I'll do an hour-long voice note. That'll be fun. Hashtag old audio becomes new again. But thankfully, just checked, and I have this stuff. I have the recording equipment, and I know part two is going to come out today, recording this Sunday afternoon. So I just really thought to myself, like, you are going to record part one before part two goes up. And two things. Just want to thank AGs who are aware of, you know, stuff my family has been going through with my dad, and we're going through some other stuff. And so being a solo indie podcaster, that means, unfortunately, when I'm going through some sort of stress or life event, whatever, it's like everything stops but focusing on whatever's going on, which is absolutely the right thing to do. But I apologize because things become a little bit flexible. And while I love to put out as many episodes as I can, sometimes, even though I intend as much as possible to make sure there's like a Tuesday, Saturday drop always as much as I possibly can, and then I'll add in others throughout the week, sometimes that doesn't happen. And so I just want to thank AGs for your patience and understanding and just having a little bit of grace there. Because if an episode isn't up when you expect it, there's probably a pretty good reason for it, which I technically, philosophically, I'm keeping private, but I do just want to acknowledge that I've unfortunately, because of my own health stuff, had to call 911 a few times, but I've never had to call 911 on someone else while out of state. And so calling 911 from New York City, trying to explain that I have someone who needs some support in Rhode Island was more of a journey than I expected, because I don't know if it's like a New York specific thing or whatever. People don't understand that Rhode Island has nothing to do with Long Island. And now I know that when you're calling from out of state, like just Google, you know, whatever town you're trying to get in touch with, their fire department or their specific local number. But I was just thinking instinctively, I call 911. And the lovely, confused operator I was speaking to, I just kept saying, it's the state of Rhode Island. And her answers were like, Long Island? And I was like, no, the state of Rhode Island. And so she would put me on hold for a minute, which is excruciating when you're on an emergency phone call, and then return back. And she's like, okay, I got it. No problem. We're going to connect you to Long Island. And I was like, it's not Long Island. She was like, okay, no problem. Putting you back on hold, getting you off of hold. Okay, we're going to connect you with like Albany or something. I was like, again, not the state of New York, Rhode Island. At one point I said, Rhode Island, it's near Connecticut and Massachusetts. And she was like, copy that. She put me back on hold and she's like, okay, connecting you to Suffolk County. And I said, I can't do this again. I'm so sorry. I can't do it. It's enough. So thankfully she connected me to not Rhode Island, but the NYPD. And I went with them and trying to explain a Rhode Island street address, which just sounds like a Disney character. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, saying drives and streets named in Rhode Island versus like East 17th Street, if you're calling in New York City, it's not the same thing. I'm like essentially saying like Celery Lane, the state of Rhode Island. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, we were able to get in touch, and the EMTs that I spoke with on the phone essentially know our family at this point. So they were like, yep, we got it. we remember you guys. How are you? Suffice it to say, which I'm going to say 80 times, stuff is like, you know, all things considered kind of under control here. And I am recording in the murder room, also known as my childhood bedroom, which I love to post about on social because I'm in a state of disbelief. Additional furniture, by the way, has been added since I was last here days ago. Literally had just gotten back to my apartment in New York. And I remember thinking to myself, what a jinx, how lovely it is to go to sleep in my bed here in New York City, not knowing what the next day would bring. But yes, yeah, so I'm recording this in my childhood bedroom, which used to be a normal, you know, off-white, cream, whatever the fuck, and is now just a vibrant dark red with red walls, red window treatments, a red rug, and black furniture. And it's vibrant. It's, I'm going to pretend majestic. It's vibrant. And Tobes loves it, so I guess I technically love it. It gives a different kind of energy when recording an episode that's not the Clawfuss, but here we are. So anyway, I promised that I would record an episode about Potomac, so I just wanted to share a little bit of background why this episode is coming to you a little later than anticipated, recorded a little bit later than anticipated. But we're all doing okay here, and we need to celebrate Potomac. So again, grace, patience, yada, yada. I had to push watching Potomac as the season aired because I was dealing with a lot and just trying to catch up. So I was able to binge the season prior to the reunion starting. And I didn't love the season. I wish I could say that I did. I wish I could be like, ooh, there's meaning here. There's value here. And I think that's going to become apparent through the reunion. I think that going off of the reunion, I guess you could call this season a success because I do think the reunion is going to be gangbusters just going off of part one. But it was hard when the season ended for me to figure out a way to like talk about this season, even in a single episode to encapsulate the season, because I just felt like I didn't have a lot to say, which is why, once again, I'm so thankful to the reunion because I feel like they're describing and communicating even just between the cast and between Andy and the cast in a way that makes me feel curious and inspired to chat. Like there's a vibrational difference between the energy of the season itself and the reunion that makes me feel not only super positive about the season because of the reunion, but also, not to get ahead of myself, except that's my literal favorite thing to do, excited about next season, because I just feel like everything is working. Just even according to part one, there was something about the energy where I just had so much fucking fun. Like, I watched this episode a second time and was just laughing, maybe at the same moments, but they were still goddamn funny, and gasping at the same moments and feeling like, yeah, this is the conversation. I think one of the issues with this season, obviously, was we knew about Karen's DUI. We knew, even though she refused to acknowledge it, that it was in fact a DUI. We knew that she was and is maybe still, I mean, maybe that's like a relatively cynical way of viewing it, but I do still think that she's deflecting responsibility, even in the language that she uses to talk about this. Maybe that's just a part of her like catching up or going through her own process, but I think she's closer to taking accountability now than she was. But she's still, I think, avoiding things, being relatively evasive. And yet the cast, because she's absent, is able to have conversations that I know I did as a viewer expected to have during the season itself. It felt like the cast was in a really difficult position because Karen was trying to convince everyone on camera and off that she was like the victim of some sort of conspiracy that had nothing to do with drinking, that she would quote unquote prove in court. And obviously that was a flop, did not go well. I guess you can kind of find any sort of legal representation for what you want if you're willing to pay for it. Feels like as someone who only knows a small amount about her legal strategy from what she has sort of showed us, but also what the cast members have said about it, is that she found someone who is willing to tell her what she wanted to hear, which is like, this will all work out in your favor, take it to court, which I think she probably would say, looking back, was a huge fucking mistake to go to trial on this. You know, it's one of the difficulties with Karen, something that Giselle said that the cast agreed with, was that Karen is a very different person. She's much more grounded, organic. She's a better friend off camera than she is on. And yet, when we think of Karen off camera and on, there is still a performance there. I mean, it's the thing that Andy said that was like, I think he said it was like one of the two headlines coming out of the video that was shown at the start of the episode, when she said, I want to come back to the show and no longer be the grand dame, but like be Karen. Like being Karen is enough. And I think that landed for him as it did for many of us. But then I also think like, okay, that's an important thing. Like that's a productive, positive step forward. But also, who is Karen? Because it doesn't seem like in her real life, she's taking accountability or ownership of things that she entirely deflects on camera. So while it's important to know that some of Karen, a la the Grand Dame, is a performance, maybe it's like being a little extra zesty, a little like quippy, maybe bitchy at points, funny, sarcastic, just heightening everything to give the Grand Dame. Like I can understand that she's probably a lot more open and one could argue even like friendlier in real life. There's also, you know, a flip side to that where we're missing some elements here of honesty, accountability, and to be really frank, like humility that I don't know exists on either side. If it's the grand dame, as a dame, I should know, on camera and off. And so while this episode is ever so slightly tardy for the party, there was a Washington Post piece that came out over the weekend. And I actually just want to share it. This is something that I usually do on the Patreon that I call Reading Rainbow episodes, where I, you know, share some sort of, you know, typically it's like more of a deep, deep dive piece and then share my perspective on it. I've done that with a truly wild profile of Bethany Frankel. That's like one of the best things I've ever read about a housewife, which you can read on New York Magazine and The Cut. I think it came out in the past year. And also I've done some like post New York finale Reading Rainbows, post Salt Lake City Reading Rainbow episodes on the page. But this is one that I just wanted to share because I think it's connected to I think ongoing questions that people have about who Karen is. And frankly, her incredibly upsetting record of drinking and driving. So it's a piece that came out over the weekend in the Washington Post, not exactly the Surrey County Record, that says Real Housewives of Potomac star to go before real judge, oy vey, for DUI sentencing. Karen Huger, 61, faces a sentencing hearing Wednesday in Montgomery County, Maryland, after wrecking her car last year. And this is something that was published yesterday on the 22nd by Dan Morse, again in the Washington Post. So I just want to share this because it was a little bit of an eye opener for me, and shares, you know, obviously Karen's perspective, but also the prosecutor's. And I think both, frankly, deserve to be heard because also a lot of this, unfortunately, was not a part of the season when it came to Karen being open or, frankly, allowing people to talk about what happened. Very, very different strategy than Shannon Bedore most recently on Orange County. Okay, so here we are. So just bear with me. I think this is an important thing to hear. On a recent episode of The Real Housewives of Potomac, discussion turned to an absent character, Karen Huger. The Grand Dame of Potomac had gone off to alcohol rehab, and her fellow housewives debated how that would sit with a Maryland judge who will sentence her soon for something she did off air last year, driving drunk and crashing her Maserati. And I do also just want to acknowledge before I continue, just a trigger warning that this is going to reference something that Karen has discussed previously on prior seasons of Potomac, which is her surviving a sexual assault. So I just wanted to share that before continuing the article. Okay, continuing on. Do I feel that she's going to rehab right now because she's trying to lessen her sentence? Absolutely, Mia Thornton offered. I can't knock the hustle, said Wendy Osefo. I would, too. That is unfair, countered Stacey Rush, who advanced a different tack. Let's give her grace. Huger, 61, is back in Potomac and set to return to Montgomery County Circuit Court on Wednesday for sentencing, following her convictions 2 months ago for drunken driving, failure to control her speed, and other counts. That trial was widely followed, owing in large part to police body camera evidence that was made public and showed a visibly intoxicated Huger stumbling at the scene, slurring her words, and being taken to a police station. The show has hardly shied away from the case and recently aired excerpts from the videos. Oh God, Huger tells one of the officers, I'm lit. Huger could be sentenced to up to 2 years in jail, prosecutors said in court filings. In a reflection of Maryland's sentencing guidelines, though, they are seeking 6 months. Huger's attorney will seek a sentence that imposes no jail time, but instead stresses rehabilitation. Huger is expected to speak at the hearing to be held before veteran judge Terrence McCann. A recent court filing by the attorney, David Martella, offers a preview of what they are both likely to tell McCann. That includes the profound impact the trial left on Huger, who during the proceedings sat silently as videos were played and witnesses spoke. She was shocked with embarrassment, Martella wrote. She could not turn off the testimony or the body cameras. She could not get up and walk out of the room. The trial was a wake-up call. The call led Huger to check herself into a 28-day stay at a treatment center in Florida to address three problems: alcohol abuse, over-reliance on antidepressants, and trauma, dating back 42 years to when she was raped in college. Since coming home from the center, Martella wrote, Huger meets every morning with an Alcoholics Anonymous coffee group. Prosecutor Jordan Kramer is poised to offer a different view. Her filings reveal that Huger had three alcohol-related traffic cases from 2006 to 2011, which yielded a guilty finding for driving while impaired and another for driving under the influence, neither resulting in jail time. The fact that Ms. Huger has repeatedly been given the benefit of another chance on three separate occasions demonstrates that she has not learned anything from her prior arrests, Kramer wrote. In fact, it appears as if she has been emboldened. The prosecutor recounted the latest incident when she swerved down a dark, narrow, winding road. Ms. Huger is extremely lucky that neither she nor anyone else was seriously injured or even killed, the prosecutor wrote. And she criticized the timing of Huger's rehab after the conviction and her selection of a facility that offered spa services, chef-prepared meals, equine therapy, and an organic recovery garden. The state is concerned that the program that Ms. Huger did choose to enroll in equates itself to a luxury resort experience, Kramer wrote. Huger grew up in Surry County, Virginia, and attended the University of Virginia for 2 years, but withdrew after being raped by a fellow student, aspects of her life she has shared on the show. Huger started and managed a staffing company for 2 years, went on to marry a Maryland businessman, and raised two kids as a stay-at-home mother. By 2016, and for its premiere season, The Real Housewives of Potomac came calling. And in Huger, it had a fan favorite. Episodes followed her launches of a fragrance, La Dame by Karen Huger, and a wig line, La Dame by Karen Huger. The show chronicled her work with PAVE, a group that supports survivors of sexual violence. By spring 2024, she was rolling in her eighth straight season on the show. The night of March 19, Huger had met a friend for dinner, where she drank champagne before driving home alone, according to court filings. Just before midnight, 3 miles from her house, Huger's car veered left onto the center median and ran over a pedestrian crossing sign. Then she veered right, across the road and onto a grassy area, where she crashed and hit another street sign. The car's front was crushed and its airbags deployed. In short order, police arrived and arrested her. Though their videos weren't made public at the time, news of the crash and her drunken driving charge leaked out. Huger downplayed what happened. Last night, I met a girlfriend for dinner. We talked and brought up some very emotionally sensitive topics, she told TMZ. I was crying on my way home and saw a car heading for me. I swerved to avoid the head-on collision, hit the divider, and then a tree. I'm hurt, bruised up a bit, but so grateful I am alive. The statement didn't mention the drunken driving citation. 7 months later, Huger told E! News, I'm waiting for my truth to come out. The truth, 2 months later, as concluded by a Montgomery County jury, was that Huger was guilty of driving under the influence and other counts. Within 2 days, she was filmed for a future episode of The Real Housewives of Potomac. Do you think that you may have an issue with alcohol? She was asked. No, I'm not an alcoholic. Let's be clear, Huger responded. At the time, an over-reliance on antidepressant medication was still clouding her understanding of what happened, according to Martella. That to me is, that is a wild argument, just to say that an over-reliance on antidepressant medication was clouding her understanding of what happened. Certainly mixing antidepressants and alcohol is, and especially if you are binge drinking, is absolutely not recommended. But I don't know what kind of medication Karen is on. I am absolutely not a health provider, clinician, nor hers. But the lack of ownership here is unfortunate. Continuing on, the attorney said that Huger's impairment shown on the police videos resulted from a combination of alcohol and medication. Her exact alcohol level was never known because she refused to undergo a breathalyzer. Jurors reached their verdict after watching the videos and hearing testimony from responding officers. She was hammered, Sergeant Brett Trahan told them. Beyond her sentence, Huger's return to the show remains both unclear and a subject of intense interest from viewers. She recently offered her preference, saying in a video piped into a recent episode that she wanted to dial back her character. No more Grande Dame. I plan to be coming back as Karen Huger only, she said, because Karen is enough. So, yes, could I have just given a little bit of an overview of that piece? Yeah, technically I could have, but I thought it was important to hear that and even just for me to say it out loud because Karen, I wish for her the best. I do not have the level of empathy for her that she sort of set as a mandate when it comes at the cost of honesty and accountability. I am extremely and remain extremely uncomfortable with that statement she put out where she was noting her memory of remembering upsetting details that she has experienced through her life, which I am not minimizing in any way. If I remember correctly, she was also like referencing the loss of her parents. But to not remember or put out that she was arrested for drunk driving, to say this was a part, essentially implied that this was a part of some sort of conspiracy, to say her truth was going to come out. And her truth was not only that she was correctly arrested for drunk driving, among other charges, but that she has done this several times before is maddening. Now, I actually kind of thought, because of her handling of this during the season, that there was a genuine significant reason why she might not come back, unrelated to the possibility that she may or may not seek or receive some element of jail time. We don't know. We will find out on Wednesday. I didn't think that she would return. I just felt like the way that she handled this on camera, and frankly in her real life, but I'm sure the show and network, to be honest, are more concerned with how the show is impacted. I mean, I know they care about their cast members, but I also think that for them, she became more of a liability than the value that she's brought to the show for so many years. I just felt like there's no way to move forward with this person who isn't acknowledging this terrible thing that she chose to do. But even the way that this has been described, I mean, obviously her lawyer, who I believe is a new attorney, that the one that she had been working with on the trial has since been replaced by somebody else, I believe. And that may be incorrect. I apologize. But obviously, they're going to have a specific perspective where they're fighting to ensure that she receives no jail time or as limited jail time as possible, that they have a different narrative around this than the prosecutor would. That's completely understandable. That is that person's job to advocate and fight for her, regardless of how you feel about the language and narrative they're using. But I felt two things, honestly, about Karen in watching the reunion. One was, I actually thought the show did a really fucking good job with the edit. I felt like it was positioned in such a way that Karen wouldn't have allowed during the season itself, and maybe needed to happen when she wasn't there, where everybody was on the same page that, like, God forbid, we all understand that she was driving while drunk. And I really do have a little bit of a bitter, sour, whatever taste in my mouth, really about that post that she put up where she was painting herself as the victim in all of this, that she was dealing with intense family matters, absolutely no acknowledgement of drinking alcohol, where she was saying, I was crying so much that I got upset and got into an accident, thank God I'm okay, versus the fact that as one of the viewers who's feelings were shared in the reunion said, and they had lost someone from drunk driving and said, like, I have no empathy for her. I feel like she should receive jail time. She needs a wake up call. I think the camera at that point positioned to Kay, at least at the start of that person's feelings being shared, where she definitely appeared startled by them saying that they felt like Karen should receive jail time. People, I think, are going to have a variety of opinions about this. But my opinion is, to be honest, I continue to feel really frustrated with this version of Karen, which might be the realest version of Karen, which is someone who doesn't have maybe the ability to look at her relationship with alcohol, but also, honestly, even if there are questions between, like, Karen and herself, and maybe a little bit of denial about her relationship with alcohol, the fact that she from the start was lying, purposefully lying, and trying to say that she didn't drink, that her truth would come out, that it was a different scenario, is unfathomable to me, because also she does have a huge platform. And to use her platform in a way that was solely meant only to protect herself, when frankly, a different person, when working in PR, would probably argue that the best way for her to protect herself, if you're thinking only strategically, is for her to take responsibility. Because what she's doing now, what she has done for the last season, I think, is just engage in a lot of this, like, frankly, like, sort of like muddiness about all of this, and get more people mad about the fact that she was not taking ownership. I think that had she not been so proud or in denial or frankly arrogant to think that she could get away with this, which is what I would argue she tried to do by going to trial. I don't know if she thought her story would alleviate her behavior. I don't know if she thought those videos wouldn't be shown. I don't know if her counsel didn't tell her that that would happen. Like, there's so much of this that is confusing and maddening. But at the end of the day, I was appreciative for the way the cast was talking about it, regardless of who was really sharing their opinion. Because I think everybody on both of those couches was, like, first off, concerned for Karen, but also unwilling to engage in a conversation that began and ended with, like, you need to be my soldier, so shut the fuck up. That's what she was doing during the season, was saying, if you are a friend to me, you're not going to say anything. And that's unfair to them as friends, quote unquote, friend circle. It's also unfair to them as people whose job it is on camera is to talk about the reality of situations that occur, even if they're so incredibly sensitive as to someone's arrest over drunk driving. It is incredibly unhelpful, one would say, understatement of the year, that this has happened, that Karen has done that. It hasn't happened to Karen. Karen has chosen to drink and drive multiple times and be caught. We have no idea how many additional times she has done it. It can't be understated. She could have killed someone. I know that her concern and some of her past statements is she could have hurt herself, but she could have killed an innocent person because of her incredibly selfish, terrible decision to drink and drive repeatedly. And so I think this has been a wake-up call. Investing can sometimes feel overwhelming, with all the fancy jargon that makes it seem more complicated than it really is. Maybe all those finance bros just want another thing they can try and mansplain. Well, Acorns believes that anyone can be an investor. That's why they make it so easy to stick to basic, time-tested principles that give your money a chance to grow. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. Investing, for me, felt like something I couldn't start without a substantial amount of money on hand. That's why Acorns is so important. Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing today. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. The way that the cast talked about this was incredibly interesting to me. There was Stacy, who kind of comes into the door with a life that she wants to present to us, that seems to be operating on a purity scale where it's like peace and love. You know, we all need to support Karen, and supporting Karen means either shutting the fuck up or just sending her the best. And that's where the conversation ends. And the sort of mini discussion between Stacy and Wendy, or rather Wendy's response to what Stacy was saying, to me was fascinating. Because Stacy is saying the thing that I think many people could agree with, which is like, we want to support Karen, certainly in her decision to seek treatment. And that is something that the whole cast, obviously Andy, agreed with, and also said, you know, she chose to do this now. She didn't do it before she was sentenced, or before she received the guilty plea and was sentencing on the horizon. But the important thing is that, like, she's in treatment now. And also, as the cast said, is it possible she is going into treatment as a strategic decision in advance of sentencing? Yes, that's possible. And is that something that anyone on the couch, as they all admitted to, would do? Yeah. Like, I don't think that is... I think people, when you're looking at the possibility of jail time, we don't know of the reasons behind Karen's decision to seek treatment. And I don't want to suggest that it was a bad idea for her to do that, because it absolutely, to me, was the right move. And the cast is in support of that decision. But they're also saying, like, yeah, could it have been a strategic one? Yes. And would I have behaved any differently if I had been in her circumstances? Probably not. Like, we can't necessarily begrudge her for making this choice, but we can absolutely have a conversation about questioning where she is now. And Stacy seems so unwilling to have that conversation, which she presented as more of a sign of like friendship and support. We can have that conversation. We just need to send her good vibes and that's it. And Wendy's kind of interruption of that narrative, I thought was incredibly important, because Wendy is saying, I get, you know, essentially, Stacey, I get what you're saying, but a part of friendship is being honest. And we need to be honest about who Karen is, what she may or may not be struggling with, and the fact that she didn't allow us to have difficult conversations. She shut it all down. We weren't permitted to talk about even what happened the night of the arrest, let alone questions about her relationship with alcohol or anything else. And I felt like that was a really important moment to have. Like, it really honestly stood out for me. And I thought the show did a pretty fucking good job of handling a really difficult situation. And I think a lot of people are probably going to have different feelings about Karen's behavior this season. Certainly her arrests and record of drinking and driving. The fact that those videos, I mean, I know that they became super like niche viral, obviously, for the Bravo audience. But, you know, The Washington Post is writing about this. So it's a story. I mean, Karen is a celebrity. She's someone whose name is known. It's became a big part of the season. It's going to be written about. It's going to be covered. You know, even in her terminology, I think it was in the initial video, but she said something along the lines of like, I accept full responsibility for what happened with my car accident, which to me, I was just kind of, and this might be just parsing things where I'm being too sort of specific with language, but I have to be honest with my gut instinct to that, which I thought was interesting, because she's saying, I accept full responsibility for what happened with my car accident, which to me still feels like she's a step outside of like something happened to her versus versus she made a decision, and also versus saying she was driving drunk. She's still, to me, not really able to be honest about what happened. And also her in that video saying, this is never going to touch me. Do you know who I am? It doesn't bode well for lessons learned, but also you cannot force Karen to feel something that she may or may not, or she might be too in denial. I think there's been so much about Karen that we don't know, which is kind of fascinating considering how many years she's been on Housewives and what a beloved Bravo Leb she's been for all of these years. I mean, she's been one of the best, I think, just really funny and dynamic. And a lot of the punchlines have been not necessarily with her telling the joke versus like sometimes like being the joke. This is a totally different matter. And I really appreciated Wendy in her response to Stacey with the whole like, let's give her grace, and just saying that, you know, you don't need to mute a conversation that is complicated that needs to be had. It's not going to be cookie cutter, and friendship needs to be honest. I think that's right. I don't know. Stacey is to me such a curiosity as a Bravo Leb. I guess I don't feel like the total adoration for her that maybe other people do, including people who've been on the podcast. And I love that. I love when someone loves a Bravo Leb. I don't need to feel that way to like love their feeling. I think she was great casting. Like, she definitely was. There is something about her that I find really interesting. First, I think she's a genuinely quirky personality. And I do think the question of purity in Stacey is interesting. We see that most obviously in her very strange, unfortunate relationship with TJ. I don't know what's going to happen in part two, which we're going to see tonight. There's some sort of like, holy shit, what the fuck moment with him, you know, spoiler alert, behaving in a manner that's not great. I was so thankful for Vanessa from Real Moms of Bravo, who guested on a recent AG, who was like, TJ sucks, because he absolutely does. And there is something that's like, I guess, not quite an LOL, but certainly ironic about a man who doesn't want to engage in any kind of like sexual behavior because he wants to keep his relationship pure, but also seemingly treats his girlfriend like shit, where it's like, oh, okay, the purity that we're focused on is sex, but we're not really focused on your treatment of this woman and maybe other people as well. And for Stacey, I think she's trying to exist in that world as much as possible. I also wonder how much of the Stacey that we're seeing on TV is inspired by like this Stacey that has performed on, and I apologize, I forget which network it is, but like QVC, HSN, where she gives a very kind of modeled, where it's like a very specific personality. And Housewives is built around breaking down those walls, where it's like you come on and think you're going to be seen as someone who doesn't swear, who doesn't cuss, who has this like very sort of Barbie and Ken doll, because they don't have genitalia, kind of relationship between her and her boyfriend, where it's like everything's okay and we love each other and we're not having sex because our love is like, you know, again, beautiful and pure. She's not going to behave in a manner that she thinks will come across as crass in any way. But then we get little holes in that, like the preview for, again, part two, where she, God forbid, swears and like has some sort of like zesty response, which I really enjoy. Because I'm like, let's see that Stacey more, where it's the Stacey who's saying to Mia, like, I'm mad at you. You pissed me off. You treated me terribly on this vacay in Miami, which we will get to. Because if there were three moments that really landed for me, one was all things Karen, obviously. One was Wendy and Giselle's new friendship, new beginning, because I am obsessed with it. And the other was the Miami trip, because I gasped 90 times. Even rewatching the episode, I gasped again at the same points because I couldn't believe it. I was like taking photos of the text messages with my phone while watching it on my computer in the murder room here in East Greenwich, Rhode Island, because I was like overwhelmed. I couldn't believe it. I would, if I had been Jazzy or Stacey, I truly would have lost my shit. Like the fact that the cast obviously knew that something had happened, maybe probably knew all the details and were just like, oh, like Ashley Darby doing her level, like the Ashley classic, did something happen? Let's circle back. Tell me more. Obviously, these women knew. I'm guessing more than the headlines of what occurred in Miami, but that was shocking to me. I was just shaken by it. I was like, oh my God, because I just couldn't. If I had been Stacey or Jazzy in that moment, I would have lost my fucking mind. And so I fully support Stacey being irate about it. I want to make that clear. I like seeing that Stacey, because I think Stacey, it's not to say that like the Stacey that we may have seen on like the Home Shopping Network or QVC isn't a part of who she really is. My argument is that's not the only part, but that's maybe Stacey kind of interacts with people like she's on a proscenium stage. Like Stacey is like playing the part of Stacey to like facing the crowd. She's doing it for the cast members. She's certainly doing it for us. And so when we get to those other moments where it's like, no, there's other Stacey's here that exist, I appreciate it. I'm hopeful that she is going to be maybe more honest with herself about the person that she has convinced herself is her own Prince Charming. But those were the three moments that really landed for me. And also Giselle crying about Karen. Like they have, who can forget? It's the example that I often use of the ideal casting situation where you find two women in this incredible community who have battled each other, who have been frenemies, who argue about who won in a cookie bake at a Jack and Jill years prior to the show existing, to Potomac being created, where you have women who know each other, who maybe like each other, who maybe you don't want to fuck with each other, who are friends in some way, frenemies in some way. The Giselle Karen example is to me like among the best that you could look for. It's the problem with New New York. It's the problem sometimes with when new, and it's a challenge, I think, for any franchise when you bring on new people who don't know cast members except from what they have likely seen on TV or maybe seen from afar. Where sometimes there's a cursory, we met each other, we went to dinner. And the reason you went to dinner is because you found that this person had been cast and production was like, can you take them to dinner? So you've said that you've gone with them to dinner, where there hasn't been a connection or history. And we saw that in how Giselle was talking to Karen. And yeah, she's going to, you know, lob some jokes now and again, but there is also a history there. And Giselle is often, you know, she kind of clamps up those moments of vulnerability. But I was really appreciative for her showing it and for the cast talking about the difference between the Karen that they get to see, the support that she's shown Kay and shown other people, the way that she has, you know, been a good friend off camera, and then the Karen that they see on camera, and maybe wanting more of, you know, obviously Karen to potentially come back versus the Grand Dame. I don't know if she will return. I really don't. There were moments when I thought there was no way, moments where I thought, okay, there is in fact a probability of this happening. I don't know. Some of it's going to be certainly, how could it not, up to what happens with sentencing on Wednesday. And what the show is looking to moving forward, and wherever Karen might be in her life. And I think people's upset about Karen's decision making, not only around her decision to drink and drive repeatedly, but also her decision around how she wanted to evade responsibility for this, avoid discussion of it. People have the right to be upset. And again, I know those videos that came out like went viral and people were making LOLs of them. And I'm not in any way like criticizing that. But just to say, just from my like little corner of the world, my two shekels, when I saw the limited amount, because I didn't watch, I saw some clips, but I didn't like go out of my way to watch whole video packages. I don't even know how long those clips were from the night of her arrest. Honestly, the only feeling that I had when watching it was anger. I didn't think it was funny. I was infuriated by how intoxicated she was, by what she was saying when she was drunk. You know, it to me was like not funny. And I was very frustrated with how she presented this over the course of filming, when she was on Watch What Happens, in the episodes that we saw on social media. I thought it was really disappointing and infuriating that she would use her platform in this way. But also maybe that's, and I'm not saying she doesn't deserve accountability and criticism, but I don't know. That seems to be, for Karen, how she has existed in her life for so long, just living in a complete state of denial. And I'm not negating trauma she's experienced, but I'm also saying that doesn't absolve her of accountability and strong criticism for her actions and behavior. Many truths can exist at once, regardless of whether or not Karen agrees with that sentiment. I do want to, though, move along a little bit, because I just have to say, so listen, I've said some shit about Giselle. I loved Giselle. When Potomac began, I was absolutely a Giselle stan. I remember having her on Andy Scrolls thousands of years ago. I think she was maybe one of the first housewives to be on the pod, but that also might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure she was. And I was just so excited to have her on the show. And this is like, I think toward the beginning of when AG began, if I'm remembering correctly, which absolutely might be wrong. But she's had a bad couple seasons. I think the last couple seasons for her have been quite bad. I was not against her maybe having some sort of time out. There were moments where I was just like, enough, Giselle, where she just was doing it was a bad job. I didn't like who she had become. I felt like the Giselle Robin dynamic was like rancid at points. I didn't understand. I felt like her decisions on camera were inexplicable, where she was more interested in moments of revenge than entertainment. And the thing about Giselle is she can be so deeply, to me, deliciously entertaining. She's vibrant. She's funny. She's smart. She's evasive with her personal life. Questions go on. But the Giselle that we have seen return to form this season has been so delightful for me. It feels like she gets the joke again, and she's not just being dismissive about she's okay taking some shots here in ways that it felt like for a couple years she couldn't. And the Giselle Wendy dynamic, I never thought that they could do what they've done so well this season. I really thought there's going to be a come to Jesus conversation with production where they're like, guys, we cannot move forward with this. It has gotten too dark. It is too intense. It's, you guys aren't able to film with each other. It's, the show can't move forward. I assume that there was some sort of come to Jesus conversation between production and them before they had a come to Jesus conversation between each other of like, we need to figure this out. We just need to put down our swords, apologize to each other, both take responsibility and move forward. And the fact that they did, these queens, the fact that they were able to have what Wendy tells us is a 2-hour conversation where Giselle's like, yeah, and I thought we were done. And she said, I had more to say. God bless, because they really did it. They were honest with each other. They can have fun with each other. They can do the thing that's so important that Giselle and Karen have been able to do successfully for so many years, which is to like take shots at each other, but not get mired in that where it's like, now it's war. They're able to have fun with each other, maybe for the first time, or at least for the first time in a while, which I love. I can't believe I'm like literally almost like laughing to myself as I say this. I cannot believe that we are where we are. Miracles can happen. Okay. Miracles exist. It's our own little like miracle on ice. Like we are watching friction between this hatred, even anger between these two women thaw to such a level where I do think they're charmed by each other. I do think they have affection for each other and they're still fucking with each other. They're still making jokes, which they should be able to do. You need to be able to be like, well, I'm not, you know, that close with her or whatever else, but they're able to see the fun in it and move forward and have fun together. And it's a fucking miracle. Like people, different sort of like coupley, you know, like dual focused wars between differing. I mean, look at it on Salt Lake City, although I don't want to give them any pointers because what they're doing is truly, you know, chef's kiss, God's work. But if you think about the ways that on other franchises, plots have stopped storylines, New Jersey, for example, people cannot move forward in certain wars that are happening between cast members. Some of that just might be because the show shouldn't move forward in this way. It's just too much. But then I think about Potomac and I'm like, it can happen. I know that, you know, New Jersey by comparison is like literally Chernobyl levels of toxicity. Generations are affected by this. But I just think about Potomac and I think of what Giselle and Wendy were able to do, and they deserve to be applauded. I'm sorry. That might feel like too much. I don't give a fuck. Like, I love it. I appreciate it. I'm appreciative of it. I can recognize it. It really, to me, feels like a miracle from where they were and how I felt about both of them, where at certain points, I'm sure on episodes of AG, I was like, you know, the show just can't move forward with this person and this person. And I think Dr. Wendy has been like MVP of the season. I think her handling of the reunion so far has been great. Her behavior during the season was great. Loved to see the White House moment. Appreciative for her being honest and saying like, you know what? I fucking regret Karen being the person invited right now, the way she talked about feeling like used in her and betrayed in her friendship with Karen, the honesty that she's brought to these conversations, the scene between her and her mom and talking about like, listen, this might be disappointing to you or upsetting to you, but I need to make a different choice and have a new chapter in my life, which obviously started years ago because she's a real reality TV cast member of Real Housewives of Potomac. I don't know how much of this was a shock, but like, yes, she's transitioning into she's like letting go of the work that she had done as a professor at, I'm sorry, I forget, I think it was Johns Hopkins, but she's still a professor. We know from the finale that she's like, she taught a course on something phenomenal. So she's still doing that work, but in a different way. She's challenging herself in a different way. I kind of like adore her. I have to tell you, I just really, and also this cast, like Dr. Wendy at this reunion, maybe the number one best dressed housewife at any reunion ever of all time. Like I cannot even think of her and the outfit and the whole look without like almost shedding a tear. She looks fucking incredible. The whole cast, Giselle, like this is a true miracles exist situation. Giselle, including the nails, Giselle's outfit was great. Like, how did that happen? How'd she walk down the stairs into the purple living room? Did everyone just like freak out? Like how did that happen? I think someone said that it happened because she used Wendy's stylist. I don't know if that's true, but like, again, this is the dividend that can pay between a friendship, a newfound regained friendship between Dr. Wendy and Giselle. Like this is the net benefit to everybody and Giselle's closet. Like this is beautiful. Everything about it. I cannot overstate at this point how much enjoyment I got out of Potomac. And maybe some of that's because I didn't love this season, where I'm like, yes, thank God we're ending on a good note. And I'm also selfishly, like, as a podcaster, like, yes, thank God there's stuff to talk about that I genuinely find is interesting, that I genuinely find at points complicated. And a big part of that for me, just like the positivity expressed this Sunday afternoon, but hours before part two airs, is like, Potomac is doing it right. I'm like literally raising my hand as I hold a mic in the other. Potomac is doing it right. And I think a big part of that was to say that, you know, Karen still struggles with humbling herself in humility. Absolutely. We have seen huge growth in Dr. Wendy, and Giselle both humbling themselves genuinely and having some humility and saying, you know what, I need to change my behavior and I need to be able to move forward with this person for our jobs. And I do think they also genuinely like each other, where it doesn't feel as performative or like formulaic, like grumbling, where I feel like, okay, they know they have to film together, but they're not going to have real fun. I actually do believe that they're having real fun. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful to whomever from production sat them down, because that absolutely happened, and was like, you guys need to figure it the fuck out if you want to, you know, keep your jobs full time and hold that champagne flute, Cherry Blossom. We love it. Cherry Blossom Festival for everybody. Like the flowers are in full bloom and the show is only better as a result. Because again, I don't know what the future of Potomac will be like with Karen. Maybe Karen comes back as a friend of. Maybe that's a good job, like a good position for her to have next season. Like maybe she's working through some things, hopefully, and maybe her being a friend of, like, you know, and apologies, because I know she has been incredibly important for the franchise, but maybe her pulling back a little bit. We've seen it can pay dividends. Look at Luann. They thought that they were punishing her and she ended up having like the best friend of season, one of the best of anybody of all time, came back full time stronger than ever. Maybe that's what Karen needs. And we know now that there are people on the show who will continue to carry the show, who are doing a great job. Speaking of future of the show and casting and stuff. Mia, poor, sweet, liar face Mia. I don't know what to say here. I have so many questions. I honestly, this is probably my fault, because again, binging the episodes, watching so many at once to catch up, I remain confused as to how to feel about how Mia was talking about her relationship with Ink, divorce, separation, conversations in front of the kids, what happened on vacation, what happened with the taking of the kids and not knowing the kids, but then you knew about the kids. There's a lot there that I don't entirely understand, but I didn't love the Mia that I saw in part one. And I did feel like she was being manipulative. And I have to go off of, there are times where it's like, listen, you might disagree with how members of the cast feel, and I'm not saying that this is a strategy that always works, but when you look at both sides of the couch and seemingly everybody, aside from Andy, who's like, what's happening? Who did, P.S., a great job, who was having fun. When Andy has real fun, I usually have real fun, to be honest. And he was having real fun. Andy loves Potomac reunions, aside from last season's and maybe some other seasons. But like he knows that Potomac is great. We know Potomac is great and Potomac is often excellent. And I think this reunion is heading in that direction, where it's like, this is a absolute rewatchable reunion arc, where it's like, we're being entertained. They are at, like, let us entertain you. They absolutely are. But if I'm looking at the cast and everybody in the cast is reacting gutturally immediately with eye rolls, with you're full of shit style responses when Mia says anything, I'm thinking two things. One, they know more than certainly we probably do about what's going on, and they know that she's lying. And or two, they don't believe her because of the amount of time that they have spent with her and the amount of times that she has boldface lied. So I feel like when people are coming in the gate being like, you know, Mia can't be held accountable for her behavior, or we don't understand, or we need to have empathy for her for what she's going through. I think people, a lot of people, I can't say universally everyone, but I think a lot of people have empathy for what Mia is going through with her separation, with having a family member struggling with his mental health, the challenges that she's faced because of, you know, changes in work, her job being taken away from her, everything else. But also that doesn't absolve her of accountability or absolve her of questions being raised about her maybe being manipulative with how she's telling the truth. And these people have spent much more time. We've seen Mia in like 42 to 44 minute edited episodes plus commercials over the course of however many episodes this season and the seasons prior. These people have spent hours and hours and hours with Mia, and certainly they can be wrong. It does say something that I might be missing somebody, but like everyone on both of those couches doesn't believe Mia when she says things, especially when it's conversations about the state of the divorce. I did think it was sort of strange that Ashley was giving like a specific answer. And that answer was right, because she's since followed up and said on social through a delightful photo shoot that she is in fact finally divorced, where she's saying, because it's true that it's like everything's been has been agreed upon. We're just waiting for like the courts to sign off. Totally get. And then Andy asks the same question to me and she has the exact same response. And I just kind of felt instinctively like she's full of shit. And the fact that the cast is all saying you're full of shit tells me maybe the cast is wrong about some of this stuff. Maybe Mia is telling the truth, but it says something that no one trusts her or believes her. That to me is the headline from this. People do not believe her. And the big, I think we're going to get into ink stuff, separation stuff, maybe Jacqueline friendship stuff in the upcoming episodes. Well, Jacqueline's there on one of the couches, so we absolutely will. But we'll get into that, I'm sure, more in the rest of the reunion. But this whole Miami thing, the way that it was presented by Mia, the way she always has an answer, she's never the one who did something wrong. It's always somebody else's fault. Oftentimes someone we haven't like met on camera or is involved in that moment isn't great. And it did show a great part of Stacey. I like seeing Stacey activated, and I firmly agreed with everything at that point. I think like literally everything Stacey was saying, because Mia inviting two women in the cast, not anybody else, which is like, yeah, does that not bode well for how she's doing with other cast members? Yeah, sure, it doesn't bode well. But also, like, I don't know how many of these people are hanging out with each other when cameras are down. So I can't super begrudge her for that. But Mia inviting Jazzy, who I barely know, and Stacey on this birthday trip to Miami and then ghosting them, which is what she did, is beyond, that's like beyond the pale. I would never get over that. Somebody, it might have been Giselle or Wendy. I forget who it was. I don't think it was Andy, but somebody was like, she owes you for those plane tickets. Yeah, she absolutely does. Like, I don't know Mia's financial situation, and obviously that's not the most important point here, but you invited two people on a trip to Miami over a specific period of time. They're only there because of your invitation. Would they be quote unquote on vacation to Miami during those days otherwise? No, they would not. Stacey found childcare, figured out maybe her like custody situation with the kiddo, with her estranged husband, who she's obviously going through divorce proceedings with, to make sure her kiddo was covered so she could go celebrate Mia. And then Mia didn't show up and is claiming. Mia takes one step forward and then two steps back because she presents a reality that no one else has experienced because she is, say it with me now, lying. So she says things, people rebut it. Thank God for those text messages, by the way. And then she's trying to figure out a way to either make her claim, her lie from 15 seconds prior, work, or just pretend that she's taking accountability. But you just lied 2 seconds ago. You just said, and then you're putting the onus of responsibility on these two people who did nothing wrong. You're saying that like you didn't know anything because your event planner was handling the RSVPs, but Stacey has text messages between you and Stacey. I don't know if the text message, where if there's like another cell phone in that text and it's like a group text, I guess that's possible, but that is nothing and everything to do with the fact that you're saying you didn't know these people were coming when you obviously did. Then you're sending them itineraries. You're not showing up. You're pretending that being an hour late, if it's an 8 o'clock dinner, but you don't get there until 9, but you don't reach out to her until 4 hours later, 12:14, 12:15 in the morning to ask where they are. You know where they are. You've been at dinner for 3 hours at that point. If we're taking your word that you show up an hour late, which I don't think was possible. I think she was there several hours late. It's nuts. Like I get that Mia's going through some stuff, but that has to me, and I guess, again, as an outsider, I guess this is like, not necessarily the fairest thing for me to say. It totally outside of you deciding to invite people on a trip and then deciding to treat them like shit, and then deciding to lie about it. You could have just walked in and from the start been like, I fucked up, but you didn't. You fought your way through this, denying what happened, essentially calling them liars. You're saying that they're wrong with what happened. You're making up an alternate reality. And then at the end, you walk into the dressing room, cry, except the tears seem to go away at points when they tell you they're not buying what you're selling them, which is this now alternate view of things where you're taking full responsibility. We didn't see that over and over again when you were on the couch. And then you're saying this stuff, you're crying, you're saying that people don't understand what you're experiencing. Nobody is, I guess we'll see with part two. At this point, people aren't denying that you're going through some stuff, but you're not, as Giselle said, there's a more sympathetic way of saying it, but like everybody's going through some stuff right now, but it's not an excuse to treat people poorly and it's not an excuse to lie. So her saying she is not able to be a good friend, I do think it was helpful to like hear from Ashley, who seemed or was playing the part, I don't know, but seemed to be honest with like the, like, this isn't you. You're not this person. You are a good friend, which I'm getting as like, you're a good friend off camera. Like, you're not this person. Obviously, Mia is going through some stuff, but also that's not an excuse to lie repeatedly. That's not an excuse to turn the truth against other people. And I think it was important to see that scene, especially with Stacey in the dressing room after being like, this isn't okay. And I don't believe you. Because again, you might not like a viewer might not agree with the cast's seeming dislike and certainly distrust of Mia to understand and appreciate that they've spent an awful lot more time with her than we have. And if everybody's on the same page here, I take that seriously. You don't have to agree with it to respect it or to understand that like they genuinely know her on the ground or know whatever version of herself she's presenting. They have far more examples than what we have seen or played witness to as viewers and voyeurs at home. And so I do take that seriously. And there is something to be said for like the majority of people on those couches being like, you're full of shit. And sure, can some of that happen come from them like just genuinely not liking her? Absolutely. That can be a part of it. But so too are real on the ground examples. And I do think she done fucked up. I really do. Even her saying, I've since spoken to both of them, using the word spoken. That's a specific word that makes a person think you've chatted, not you've like exchanged conversation that involves yourself and someone else, and then being fact checked and then pretending that reaching out or texting them. I mean, this is one of those moments. Dorit, Kyle, text message. When was that text sent? And what did it say? I'd like to see that screenshot. And that, but she then pretends, oh, well, it's like 2025. Me texting you is the new version of speaking. No, that's not true. Like, yeah, you might have a conversation with somebody over text message, but you saying something at whatever period of time, I'm guessing well after the Miami trip occurred, and maybe right before the reunion was filmed, I have no fucking idea, but you saying that seemingly it was like you've spoken to both of them and you haven't, you reached out at some point to troubleshoot, is not the same thing. Also, I do want to know about the event planner handling RSVPs, but that wasn't the actual screenshots. And then saying that you didn't know that they were in town. And once you heard, you reached out, but you didn't tell them you were running late to dinner. And then saying, well, it's my birthday. Yeah, but then you give someone a heads up if they're going to a dinner reservation. But you also sent them an itinerary And Stacy replied, and she confirmed with emoji. And one of my favorite moments from the episode was Andy, like, verbally repeating the various emoji used. Andy saying champagne click or something at one point. Laughter. You saying you didn't get a text message from Stacy, but unfortunately you're not smarter than an iPhone, let alone a sixth grader. And so the text, we do know that the text was read. You not responding until hours later. Stacy sending back a message, holding you accountable very clearly, very succinctly. And then with a little bit of zest, passive aggressively, which I am sure I would do as well, saying, look forward to seeing you soon, which is absolutely sarcastic. And Mia pretending to take that literally, or maybe not understanding that it was passive aggressive, and saying, see, that's example number one, that they're fine, is not great. Then crying and saying, your life has been bad. It did feel at that point a little manipulative, considering she was lying repeatedly in the minutes before. Wendy saying the thing that several people felt, which is like, this is what you do. You start crying so that people feel sympathy and then maybe don't hold you to account. And Stacy backstage saying, this doesn't feel genuine. This is going to be a tough reunion for Mia. I don't know, speaking of futures and where she will be with the show in this moment, I don't know what the future of Potomac looks like with Mia. Listen, I'm not in casting. I'm the first person to be like, I'm not great at, like, how do you see the cast moving forward? I wouldn't be against Mia, you know, sunsetting here with her, I guess, still on Boyfriend Inc., if that breakup maybe isn't real, which I still don't totally understand. The thing with Mia is I have so many, I guess, questions about Mia, but I just more feel like discomfort. This is one of the situations where I actually sort of don't need more information. I just kind of feel like maybe the show, I don't think the show is benefited by Mia continuing to stay in the cast. I'm very thankful for some of her contributions, less so others. And I just don't know, because nobody in the cast seems to trust her or be interested in having a friendship with her. That's really tough. When you've isolated yourself from the rest of the cast, it's almost sort of doesn't matter if no one is able to move forward with you. And also she just bring a different dynamic that doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like it's as good of a fit, understatement of the year, as other folks are on the couch. Although I do kind of still feel how I have felt about Kay, which is that she feels like a very sweet, like, lovely person who doesn't give me full-time energy, who I would have no problem with staying on the show and maybe a friend of capacity. And also it was her first season full-time, but it felt like the show was testing out possible new people. And Stacy, to me, absolute winner, makes a lot of sense move forward. I almost feel like there's like no question about that, although we will see what happens with TJ, whatever the fuck, and Happy Eddie or something, like, what's the thing going on there? And also Giselle having tea about Stacy, having a conversation with somebody in some sort of business investing about doing her own hashtag quote unquote cheater brand a la Tipsy Girl with Happy Eddie, and Wendy's reaction to that being something along the lines of like, are you really going to do that ... and not tell me? Because she technically can do whatever she wants, but, you know, we need to learn from the three-wick candle. You got to give a gal some notice. And, you know, maybe say, inspired by my cast member's success, I would like to also do this. Don't surprise her. Not a great idea. There's a lot going on. Like, I don't know. I just feel like if you haven't watched, first off, if you've never seen Potomac, absolutely, how dare you? You need to get on that immediately. But also, if you gave up on Potomac for any reason this season, no judgment coming from me, no judgment coming from the Clawfist, literally miles away from me right now. But I would say, you know, get on the reunion, get on it stat. And I am so excited for tonight's episode. I'm so excited for part two. And have a big week of recording. Lots of eps coming out, scheduling like a motherfucker. So I'm excited for that. Certainly there'll be some more Potomac conversation coming up. I do just want to add a little addendum, a little PS on a previous episode, because I've heard from so many people about this. And because a new episode hasn't come out since maybe that episode aired. I forget the timing, but I have made note of this multiple times, multiple times on social, multiple times on Instagram, because I've heard from so many people who work in the mental health care field that my confusion over Reba working as a social worker, but also as a therapist, there is a lot of crossover there. There are a number of therapists who have degrees, graduate degrees in social work. There is crossover between having a social work background and doing therapy work. I'm not going to get into the certification levels that vary state to state, although I've heard from a lot of people, but I did want to add that clarity because I still receive DMs and messages from people who are like, just a heads up, everybody being very lovely. So I don't want to say I am not appreciative, but just to say I've received so many messages that it was a normalized change of your mind based on new information. So Google wasn't technically incorrect in saying she was a social worker and also having the additional information that she was a therapist, because having a background in social work, having various degrees in social work, maybe you're doing your master's or doctorate in social work, you know, many truths can exist at once. And also, as a little sidebar to that, the number one is thanks to several people, EGs, for getting in touch. The number two is it's incredible to hear that there are so many EGs who work in the social work field, who work in the therapy field, who work as therapists, who have degrees in social work. That's just incredible. That was like genuinely really meaningful to me as someone whose mom just recently retired as a social worker for at one hospital in particular for almost 30 years. And prior to that, work at other places here in Rhode Island. So shout out. Thanks to all the folks who work as therapists, who work as social workers, who work as therapists with degrees in social work, and all of the many things that was genuinely incredible. I was like, oh, this is heartwarming to hear that, to hear from so many of you. So shout out kudos to all of you. Thank yous. Mazel of the day. And I have received that clarity and I am happy to share said clarity on this AG Classic. And thanks to all of you for listening. Again, thanks to you for your patience and understanding. Keeping some specifics private, as is my wont, as is my history. But just wanted to thank you for your patience with this episode. There will be many episodes coming out this week and also next week while I will be on a little bit of a vacay, but am in fact bringing my recording equipment because that's just how I roll here as a solo indie podcaster, a small business of one. So let me know, P.S., your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben-Simone. Because this week, I will be recording a Satchel of Gold, Satchels of Gold Spectacular on the AG Patreon. The AG Patreon, number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more. And speaking of exclusive bonus episodes, the last time I was in Rhode Island until this weekend, because I'm technically here quite literally right now recording an episode in the Red Room, I recorded a two-part Patreon episode with my cousin Sam, who is a Bravo-holic. And the last 1,000 times that I was in Rhode Island, I was like, Sam, we have to record an episode. So we recorded a double episode, nearly 2 hours. She gave her thoughts and feels. We had an aha moment talking about our shared family history, comparing it with what was going on in Augusta. And I had a true aha moment on an episode where she referenced a family member. And I was like, holy shit, I don't know why I didn't think of that until this moment, but I literally didn't, specific to this situation, and I'm losing my mind. So it's a very, very fun episode, a meaningful episode, a very special episode that you can listen to exclusively on the AG Patreon at patreon.com/AndyScrolls. Just forgot the URL. That's always helpful. Patreon.com/AndyScrolls. And again, you can DM me your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, those satchels, by messaging me on Instagram at Dame Galley, or slide into my email and send me a thesis at andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. That could be about Potomac. That could be about, what else we have? Beverly Hills. That could be about, you want to talk about Salt Lake City or New York? Also talk about Salt Lake City or New York. And also caught up on Summer House, caught up on Southern Charm, and working my way through Married to Med season 11. So let me know all your thoughts and feels. I heard Dr. Greg is still the worst. Big surprise to nobody who has watched his journey. Why is that man back on my television? What did I do wrong? What is the karma that I brought about to myself? that he is still on my television set, also known as my computer and YouTube TV. So getting through a lot of episodes in the upcoming week. I'm very excited about it. And listen, send me your satchels of gold for that upcoming Satchel Spectacular. Thanks for listening to this episode. Happy mid-afternoon Sunday, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.